Okay, have your child's triangle yet? What is it? McCullough, what's your child's triangle?
I'm looking at pictures.
Okay, is it on the right here?
Yeah, it usually shows thrombosis in the lung.
Right, so that's exactly what it is, the precursors to thrombosis.
And secondary stasis.
What is stasis?
Endothelial injury and hypercoagulable state.
Vessel wall injury. And change the blood. We get lots of words. But in general, the Shaw's triangle is the three things that must be present in order for what's in the center of that? For thrombosis to occur, a blood clot. You must have some hemostasis, some vascular stasis. The blood must be pooling. Not a lot of rapid blood movement. Okay, slow down. There must be a decrease. The simplest way to say pool is a pooling of the blood. I don't know if it's actually pooling. I think a no, but for a sluggishness of blood flow. Okay? Venous stasis. Venous static. It's stopped. A change in the condition of the blood. What could that be? What would be a good example of a change in condition of blood? I talked about it when I came to visit you last semester. Dehydration, exactly. What's dehydration going to do? It's going to concentrate the blood, right? So certainly that's going to tend to create a thrombus. It's going to tend to, the blood's going to be much more sluggish if it's concentrated, right? It's like a room is fluidly. And if there's some vessel wall injury. All setting us up for a thrombus, a blood clot. So what do we do when we're treating for this in the hospital? We keep the blood moving, don't we? We try to eliminate the stasis of blood. That's why we do the compression garments, the sequential compression devices. We want to keep that blood moving, don't we? Because with each step we take, 100 cc's goes up. Every time you step. You're pushing 100 cc's up your venous system. Well, if you're lying in bed, you're not doing that. So that's what those sequential compression devices are doing. So we're going to eliminate this, hopefully, eliminate the stasis. We keep our patients well hydrated. We're hoping that there's no change in the blood. Any dramatic change in the electrolytes, yes. No hydration. And we're hoping there's no vessel injury. Because we really don't want a blood clot. So that's for child's triangle. Speaks directly to the formation of blood clots and the three conditions that need to be present in order for a clot to form. And we can fight each one of those conditions, nursing care, in order to minimize the occurrence of blood clots. Got it? That's one of the vascular points I wanted to make. The other one was tell me a little bit about the difference between arteries and veins. Good. Veins go back into the heart. And because they're going back up, they have to have valves, right, to keep holding the blood. Good. What else? What other differences do we have? Pressure. Good. What's higher pressure? Arteries. Because what? Yeah, but one other important thing. There are more components to it, right? Because it's carrying oxygen, which are big molecules. Yeah, so it's carrying it. Carbon dioxide's really big. They're bigger, there's more pressure. Veins have a higher pressure. What else about, arteries have a higher pressure? Can you think of any other differences? Veins have carbon dioxide, arteries have oxygen. Good, veins have more waste. Speaking of waste. Where does that change take place? Two places? We'll talk about this, we'll talk about respiratory. Capillary beds and lungs. Okay, good. So, someone with a problem, I want you now to think about your patients. You know the difference between veins and arteries. I've shown you that. Okay, you're looking at someone, his lower legs have no hair growing, there's no edema, and the skin is shiny and cool. Is this a a problem with veins or arteries? You agree? Danielle, why is she right? Are you doing? No. Camille. Camille, why is she right? She says, there's no hair. This hair would need oxygen to grow. And oxygen comes from the arteries. Therefore, there must be a deficiency in the oxygen. Very good. So I want you this week to look at your patients. There's a lot of people with vascular problems. I want you to determine, is it an arterial problem or is it a vascular problem? Now you're walking in Walmart. Okay, you have to buy. If you're like me, I like to go to Walmart to buy my it's not American made, but it's the cheapest weed killer I can find. And I get my whole bottle of weed killer for $5, and if I go anywhere else, I'm going to charge me $12. So I really like to go to Walmart a couple times a year and buy my weed killer. But when I go to Walmart, I always see the classic Walmart lady. Okay, the classic Walmart lady is sitting in a little car like this, okay, and she has elephant legs. Okay? Big, red, ruddy, swollen legs. And she can't walk. She's driving in a wheelchair. Does she have a venous artery? What do you think? Venous. And why is it venous? Right, edema. So that the blood is stuck there, isn't it? And it come back up. And so it's swollen. It's ruddy in appearance. Ruddy, what does that mean? Same as have a ruddy face complexion and red from the cold and abrasion. Okay, ruddy is kind of red, purpley, you know, sometimes even hard. Yeah. They sometimes you see like little elephant things. Right? Got it? That's the difference. So look at your patients. Look for some subtleties in presentation. Think about there are lots of vascular problems. Diabetics commonly have vascular problems. Cardiac patients have vascular problems. You're going to see slow capillary reflow. So think about all this and how it has to do with the heart. Is it a venous problem? Is it an arterial? Is it simply a circulation problem? What's going on? So as you assess your patients this week, give some thought to their vascular health. Why is it in the way? Why is it in the way? That's another question. Sometimes you think they should have an edema. You think, oh, there are all these Lasix, we're taking it off. Or why are we giving a Lasix? Or why are we not giving a Lasix? What are we controlling? Think about the vascularization of the body and how we're treating it and how it's presenting. You want me to place the one to make that Lasix? Is that good? Better than the whole lecture? We need the pearls. You have to read the whole chapter.
Not
fair? Okay. Moving on, I want to talk just a little bit about problems that you see with the heart muscle itself, cardiac disorders. So we have to keep the heart pumping, okay? So we have to have that electrical conduction working. We have to make sure that it has oxygen, not ischemic. We have to make sure the muscle works in all that kind of way. But there's also problems with the heart itself. Okay. There's systolic and diastolic failure. It's also called left-sided and right-sided heart failure. So when one side or the other part of the heart fails, it's going to have different symptoms. So again, remember the hemodynamic effects of your heart. This is a nice thing you can produce in your book. So we have left side heart failure. We have a problem with pulmonary circulation. Okay, pulmonary vein congestion. Makes sense. some portal circulation. And here we have right side heart failure. Right side heart failure, you often see congested systemic circulation. It means all over the body. Definitely the liver's involved. Not so much the lungs. So we have high, you're going to read about left side, right side heart failure. I'm not going to ask you much about this, just so when you're looking in charts, low versus high output failures, pulmonary edema. This is what I was talking to my patient almost about, pulmonary edema. The lungs swell up because you're not pumping the fluid out of it. Okay. What about rheumatic fever and heart disease? We'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. So the heart itself can be infected, and there can be inflammatory diseases of the heart. You may have endocarditis, right? Myocarditis, pericarditis. So parts of the heart that can exhibit inflammation. You can have a diseased heart tissue itself, like if you have a diseased pancreas and a diseased anything. Bowel, okay, constrictive pericarditis. And we talked a little bit about valvular heart disease. We'll talk a little bit more. There's going to be some problems with valves. We replace valves, right? What do you replace them with? Anybody know? Sometimes big valves, yeah. Sometimes plastic valves, depending on what's going on. So valves can become thickened and stenotic. What does that mean? What's the word stenotic? Thick and not movable. That's going to be a problem. If that's not going to open up, it's going to be thick, it's not going to flop open like it's supposed to. That's a bit of a problem, isn't it? For that tricuspid valve. It's not going to let a lot of blood through it, is it? No, that's a real problem. Okay, here's fibrosed valve openings where they're stuck open, the opposite problem. Now we're going to get some regurgitation. And what's that going to sound like upon assessment? Swish, and it's called a regurgitation, right? A swish, a backward swish of blood through that open valve that can't close all the way. Here's one that can't open all the way, and here's that one can't close all the way. So, heart diseases within the heart. There's some nice valve, mitral valve stenosis. Okay. Stuck open, you're going to have a swishing, I think this shows it better, yeah. Okay, a regurgitation backwards. It's supposed to be going this way, but the valve remains open, so it swishes back. Here's a prolapse. The vessel, the valve doesn't close all the way. This is a congenital defect. It swishes back. So you're listening to your heart, everything's sounding good, all of a sudden you're a shh. What? You hear a swish, just like happy thing. It's a regurgitation back. Is that effective? Is that efficient for the heart? No. It's going the wrong way. Well, then how much blood is getting out and into the bloodstream the way it should? It's a problem. Okay, onward. Okay, it's the aorta. Aortic valve can stenose as well. And regurgitate. So we have valvular heart diseases, obviously. Tricuspid stenosis, regurgitation, pulmonic stenosis, and regurgitation. If you have patients with these, please look into it a little further. What are the ramifications? How serious are these? What's the effect on your patient? Why is it like this? Is it congenital, like mitral valve prolapse often? Is it stenosis? What else going on? There's cardiomyopathies, primary and secondary. This is an enlarged heart. It may be primary, meaning it's not secondary to anything. It's not secondary because of an infection. Okay, it's a primary problem, possibly because someone was an athlete at a very young age, developed a very large, strong heart. Generally not problematic. There are times it can be. We have talked about coronary artery disease. We talked about that. What about cardiomyopathies? Hypertension. What about hypertension? You learned a little bit about this in Joe, did you? Is it Dr. Schuster, hypertension, I'm not sure.
Maybe not at all. The majority of hypertension, she has a stroke or something. The majority of hypertension is primary, which means we don't have a cause. Today we've talked about lots of reasons when the heart's not, and or the lungs aren't working effectively, and the result is secondary hypertension. But the majority of people that are hypertensive don't know why. They're just hypertensive. So that is certainly a coronary, a heart risk, heart failure risk. We talked a little bit about congenital valves just a second ago. Now, what about this rheumatic fever thing? Have you heard about a link between rheumatic fever and heart disease? And what in the heck is rheumatic fever? Anybody have a clue? It's, for you, it's a good two generations ago when it was fairly common. It's untreated strep throat. Moves on to kind of this rash. It's on the chest, kind of this red rash. And then the heart can become affected, and the valves of the heart can be damaged by rheumatic fever. Untreated strep that moves into the heart valves. People with prolapses are more likely to have it, which is why people with prolapse, any kind of regurgitation, for dental surgeries or even a simple teeth cleaning, they're often required to go on antibiotics. Because you want to make sure that there aren't any strep in the mouth that gets easily into the heart that can damage, further damage the valve because of the prolapse. Okay. So rheumatic fever is an untreated strep infection that goes into the heart and can damage the valves. Very common in my parents, your grandparents' generation, where they didn't have the antibiotics that they do now to target, and the access to health care. So you'll see people that age having valve replacements today because of rheumatic fever as children. What else? Infective endocarditis, yeah. Endocardium can become infected. It may be congenital deformity, maybe a result of ischemic disease, valve prosthesis, putting in a fake valve because of rheumatic heart disease, yeah. Then we get endocarditis, great, as a result of surgery. Intravenous drug use, invasive catheters, which is why we're so very careful when we change the dressing on any indwelling catheter, right? PICC lines, for instance. Really sterile procedure to change a PICC line dressing. You only do it, it's not like the peripheral. It's a much bigger deal because it's directly to the heart. So, and that's why if you take it out, you're gonna culture it. And that's why they're really can be very dangerous. We provide extra care in dealing with those lines. Because the negative consequence is endocarditis. Right? Talked a little bit about dental health, heart surgery, obviously. Prevention, we're going to be really careful. Myocarditis, same kind of thing that happens, you know, it leaves us open to any infection, right? But the heart is also susceptible, you know that. Fabry disease, rheumatic fever, we talked about that. And commonly there'll be prophylactic antibiotic therapy such with dental work, as I described. What else? Heart failure, we're going to use all those nice meds, okay? We have some nice nursing diagnoses there for heart failure. Pulmonary edema, ooh, that can be really scary. When the lungs start swelling up from the heart not acting correctly. We want to use loop diuretics to quickly take off that fluid, quickly, or else what's going to happen? We're going to die because they can't breathe. That the lungs are just going to swell up. It's edema in the lung. Not in the alveoli, in the lung tissue. It'll swell and there's no room for the air. Morphine for the pain and to relax the respiratory system. Okay. Yeah. To take off the fluids in the tissue because you have edema. So you can use the diuretic to pull out the fluids back into the bloodstream out of the... In fact, that's what saved my patient's life was that Lasix. Was pushing that Lasix really fast when you have pulmonary edema. Pulled it right back in the tissue to be able to breathe. So if you don't have, if you're pushing like that, there's no room to get back out. So yeah, push diuretics heavily. Vasodilators too, okay? We want to stop any bronchospasms. OK. Okay, rheumatic fever, we talked a little bit about that. Got that down, right? Affected endocarditis, myocarditis. We did all of this. And this is when you just go through and cross out and don't worry about all these little details. Okay? Okay. Sound good? One more fun little exercise for us. How are we doing on time? Are we okay? Oh, we're great on time.